It's now 6:00. The work session will now come to order. First order of business is the pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next order of business is the planning director comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments other than to mention that the agenda tonight for the work session is two items that we previously discussed, and we're bringing back more information.
Okay. At this time, we will move on to the public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak at any of items, you may come forward and come to the podium, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. See no one coming forward. We will move on to the work session. The first item is home occupations. And Mr. Brad Steve Robinson will be presenting.
Okay. We're trying to get back on the amendment for home occupations that we've been getting some citizen requests to take a look at our regulations over the last couple of months. And really don't have a lot of new information to present this evening. We want to go back through what we presented a while back, because I think there was a perception that we were trying to make the regulations more restrictive, so we just wanted to go back through it and explain a couple of things and see if we could get some questions answered that might help us address an amendment that everybody would be satisfied with. So on the screen on the left is our existing definition of home occupation and reaching the zoning ordinance. And on the right is what we brought back to you last time, with the red language being what we were proposing to add. So to start off in the definition, we had added the language to professional enterprise or activity that we found in another county's definition, and there was a lot of discussion and concern over that. So if we were to move forward with this, we would just keep that language out and not put it in there. And then the remaining of red language you see on the screen is just some additional points. For example, it currently says 25 and then has a parenthesis 25%, so we're just adding the word percent to clarify that. And then, which we hope to discuss in a second, whether we want to include the use of accessory structures in connection with home occupation. Right now, the definition currently reads such dwelling, and we were proposing to also allow use of this accessory structure as well. And then the last sentence talks about the accessory homestay. We're going to separate that out and bring that back as a separate amendment, but we would like to tag that language on if we were to move forward with this amendment. And that language was taken again from adjoining county, taken from that definition exactly how it reads there.
The Gooch one?
Yes. So there was a lot of discussion on the classes. We were talking about doing a class of home occupations, and I think there was a thought that we were trying to make the definition more complex or whatever, but this is just expanding the definition to clarify that some home occupations would be more suitable for residential areas, and then the others would be more suitable for agricultural and rural areas of the county. And we had referred to them as being a type 1 and type 2, and again, that was taken directly from another county. And I think the understanding was that the type 1 and the type 2 that the type 1 was the more intense and the type 2 was the lesser intense, and the way that reads on the screen is actually vice versa. So we wanted to kind of go back through that and explain that that's what our thinking was on that, and that was taken from another county. And, and honestly, it's some of the most simplistic language that I found. Some of our adjoining counties, like Louise and Albemarle, had a lot more complex language that we would prefer not to use. This was the simplest language, and it's just saying that if you understand the scale that's going from 1 to 2, 1 is the lesser intense, but 2 being the more intense, and we're just saying that the more intense home occupation uses are more suitable for the rural or agricultural areas, where the less intense home occupations fit in better in your dense residential areas. So if we were to do a class in the home occupation definition, this is what the full definition would look like. We would keep our existing definition with the amendments that we showed earlier that we were talking about last time, and then we would tag on the types for 1 and 2.
Yeah. Can I ask a question while that 25% thing is, because I wrote that question down. In other words, they could not rent out the whole house. Say they were going to be gone for a week to another house that they had rented. They couldn't rent out the whole, they could only rent out 25% of it to someone that.
That doesn't make sense. They're not there. How do you know somebody's only using 25%?
Yeah, that's getting more into the accessory homestay, which we have to go back.
That would have a different set of standards.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I think it's a good standard for
an office
or my candle making business or whatever that might be in my house. That essentially my whole house is not this business. Then it needs to be.
So that the homestay would be this.
But the homestay is sort of the outlier in that right there that needs to be addressed a little bit better.
Yes, and that's why we decided to separate this out, because that's a whole other type of use we need to study a little bit more.
So you'd have this statement in here, but then you'd have another section that it really had a.
We'll have another definition for it.
Okay.
The way that sentence reads, somebody can read it as no more than 25% of the gross floor area of the dwelling or the accessory structure, which means if you have a shed and you've got a potter's shed or something, that you go and use 25% of that shed. And I'm not sure that's what we want. We might want to have a studio take the shed, for example. So somehow I think we ought to get to the 25% of the square footage of the dwelling and accessory structures combined. And I don't.
And that's what we did at Dinwiddie, I think. Right.
And I'm not sure about home occupation, including the rental of rooms to tourists. It gets confusing because there you've set a standard. I don't know why that rental of rooms to tourists just can't be a separate category and not a home occupation and not be listed in here and have its own set of standards. The other question I have is, you've got the type 1 and type 2, and which order they go in can be confusing, as we see. I think maybe wording like major and minor might be better, or something that's more obvious to folks. But there are some things that are in the lower, you know, that we've said are more suitable for densely occupied that would also be fine in the agricultural district because there are less intensive use. So I'm not sure that the use should be defined by where it is. The use should be defined with a set of operational standards of what it is, and then in the zoning districts you say which are permitted, seems to me.
So now, if a person has their own business in their own home, they can only use 25% of that for their business, as well as the fact that if they rent it out to another person, they can only use 25%.
No, they can't. The other person can't use. That's not a home occupation.
That's not a home occupation. Okay. All right. I got you.
Ms. Condalis' point about the definition of intensity was concerning me. What's intensity?
It's kind of open-ended, I guess, to allow the zoning administration flexibility.
Well, that's fine, but it needs some criteria to do it, whether in terms of traffic or noise or character of the use or whatever it is, you need to put some standards on it.
Yeah, you use some such as language to give the zoning administrator flexibility, list some uses, and then put operational standards in.
Well, there's law that says that if you have anybody other than the Board of Supervisors making a decision, there has to be standards by which to make that decision. So if you said, for example, you know, zoning administrators to approve the color of the place, and the color shall be similar to the color of the trees behind it, you know, something like that.
So if we were to, and that was a question we have, we can call it something else other than type one or two. We can call it major or minor. Whereas the minors would be more appropriate in the denser residential areas, and the majors would be more suitable for A and O areas.
This would be by, this.
Well, I think we need to be more descriptive with probably with those types.
Yeah, I think one thing, another thing that Ms. Condoleezza was getting at was that rather than what area of the county you're talking about, is what the character of the use permitted is.
It is. If it can be in the permitted use section, it would make more sense to refer back to the definition without having.
And what we're talking about now, this will be by right and stuff.
Yes.
You don't have to come for any special use permit or anything like that. Right, I know there's a base.
Right. Well, I'm forgetting to mention it also, but I think there's a good point that maybe Ms. Condoleezza was anything that you can do, say, in a densely populated area, it's hard to imagine you can't also do that in the ag in certain area. But we understand the things that you can do with the ag. So this sort of makes two classes that are mutually exclusive.
You wouldn't
want that.
You wouldn't want a guy working on lawnmower engines in Lake Monticello as opposed to.
Yeah. But there are plenty of anything you could do in Lake Monticello, you could do in Kent Store too. So in other words, this is like one big group,
you kind
a
of
subset, as opposed to two different groups.
To more densely zoned areas, you're kind of wanting to limit it more towards like home office type of uses.
Right. CPAs and
so stuff like that.
Preparation.
Not a lot of like candle making or something like that happens in sheds. It's like creates fumes and could destroy, you know, change the character of the neighborhood basically.
Well, and there are other, I mean, operational standards often will include something like whatever materials you need for your business are brought by vehicles that are standardly bound in residential areas. So UPS, FedEx, all that, you're not getting 18-wheelers to your business. Whereas an 18-wheeler might be okay going to a farm or, you know, something like that. So that's how you get at that sort of level.
Do you recall if Dinwiddie County listed specifically home occupation type 1 and 2 as uses?
Yes, in the permitted use table.
So we have on the screen the definition of small home industry, because I guess another issue is right now home occupation definition confines the activity to the dwelling. If someone is doing something from the home and they utilize an accessory structure, it comes under the small home industry category, which requires a special permit in the A1 district. And that's kind of what spurred all this conversation, because we have some citizens that are hesitant to come forward and get approval from the county because they don't want to have to go through the special use permit process and pay the fees.
And the intensity of some of the proposed uses aren't that different than a regular home occupation, except for the fact they're using a small part of an outbuilding, which technically throws it into the small home industry section.
So that's why we have on the earlier screen adding accessory structure to the home occupation.
In other words, this would maybe partially solve that problem with some of these people that want to teach painting classes or something.
Mm-hmm.
In
Mayus, yeah.
So they wouldn't have to come to get a special use permit. So.
And then that would maybe kind of tie into this, because this is the other classification that folks come under. Being a fine art studio, and on the screen is what we brought last time with our existing definition on the left, and then another one we were going to replace it with on the right. We're not necessarily looking to go with that one now, but it's really not much difference between the two. The one on the right just specifies that it wasn't a place where the public comes to get lessons, they'll sit for photographs or, you know, for some photography.
But it says on there more than an incidental basis.
Yes.
So in other words, say if I want to do it once a month with this proposed, I want to teach a class on painting once a month, that person could do that.
That's the question.
So it's Mr. Stewart's decision, right?
Well, I think that's the question we want to discuss tonight, is how strict we want to be with the fine art studio versus making something by right versus having it require a special use permit.
I think you could keep it to the 25% of the dwelling or the floor space of the dwelling, the accessory structure. Because the big concern here is like traffic. A lot of people come in, 50 people come in to take a class. If you keep it to that percentage.
Someone's having an art show gala or something.
Or a photographer, someone's coming for a sitting, that's only one car.
I'm saying, so if you keep it to the 25%, you don't have to have the incidental basis in there because you minimize. Because I'm thinking, you know, the incident or the issue that was at hand was up there in Kent's store where she wants to have the age. But 7 or 8 homeschool kids that are in 5 mile radius come, I guess, once a week during the regular school year to give classes. It's hard to see that that's an issue. But I can see once a week is, I wouldn't define that as incidental. So I think she could still be in violation of this, but not really a problem.
I think incidental would be more like she's working on a copy of the Mona Lisa and she wants to show somebody what she's doing.
Right. That's incidental.
That's incidental.
Yeah. And so I think some of the issues at hand that I wouldn't see as a problem would be precluded by that definition. So that's why I wonder if that's a good definition.
But if you set up operational standards to include no more vehicle trips per day ban, no more people, that you take care of those issues without having to have a separate definition of this kind of studio.
I think 25% have a self-limiting factor there because you can only get so many people in there. Especially kids.
I'm not sure the history of how the fine art studio use came to be in the zoning ordinance, but it's unusual to me. I haven't seen it anywhere else.
Usually, it's one in a string of uses.
Yeah, or separated. Yeah, separated out. Like
I think historically, what happened was somebody. It wasn't contemplated that somebody wanted to do a painting studio or whatever it might be and caused it to be inserted into the ordinance. I don't know if there's any particular necessity for it to be. One thing I will say, though, is I question limiting portraiture or photographic portraits. What about a painter that wants to paint portraits or there are artists that work in portrait artists that work in pastels, for example.
I'm thinking that we should try to come up with, as the commission was saying, come up with some sort of development standards, push as much of this into the home occupation as possible instead of a boundary of intensity.
Well, that's one of the questions I have on the next screen. This definition, I think the issue is some of the artisans would come under this definition of the building or portion thereof that's used by a sculptor or artist. And again, it requires a special use permit, so there's some out there that don't want to come in and get a special use permit because they don't.
So if I'm an artist and I do most of my painting at home, maybe I have a one room, I do it. Maybe sometimes I do it in another room. And I sell all of my stuff online. I'm really technically a home occupation business. How does this apply to me?
That's my other question too.
Well, it probably does.
It would, but yeah. They're looking at doing a by right without having to get permits for it.
To me, it would be dishonorous to force somebody to get a special use permit for that type of use. And
I do too. Matter of fact, I know it's happening right here in that county.
Yeah, right. So, the more onerous it is, and the greater percentage of your likely income from this activity, the less likely people are to comply, except that, you know, this on the ground, you know, which isn't, that's all by itself a good reason to change the rules, but I think there's a lot of
it. There's staff time spent on a relatively minor issue that could, right, is generally treated as by right in other localities.
It's just, I think so.
I'm not sure why we need this distinction between fine arts and other occupations.
I agree.
I think one example you might think of is, I think all of us would be comfortable with the idea that somebody that a gunsmith would be a commercial / industrial use that would fall into one of these categories. What's the difference between that and a guy that makes bookends? You know, they both involve working wood, maybe working metal. I think the more I hear from the commission's discussion, I think what we need to do is identify what the problem conditions would be and orient our regulations toward those. So, for example, if you have, I'm just making this up, I'm not a planner, so rely on my numbers or anything, but I think in the 7 vehicle trips a day, they're generally considered to be one single family home. So if you had, put a restriction in there that no more than 10 vehicle trips a day, which would be, you know, mom and pop and the kids for the 7, and then 3 more for the customers. That kind of regulation, and generation of noise, parking, and more elaborate. You make things like infrastructure, like parking, the more it's going to limit itself. So if you tell somebody if he wants to have 12 parking spaces, he's got to pay somebody that's a home occupation is not going to want to spend the money to pay them. So if he limits himself to 2 or 3 spaces, gravel it will be no problem.
Well, suppose you had someone, I mean, there's so many people that could offer valuable services. I mean, like a petition, and she has one client at a time. And you're going to limit her to only having 3 haircuts a day?
Well, we have that example. We said the barbershop up on 53.
But they had to get a special.
They did.
But
and the reason they did was because it was a separate building.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we should encourage people to be entrepreneurs.
That's why my suggestion is that rather than worrying about what they're doing, is worrying about the effect on the neighbors.
And maybe 10 trips is, that's just an example.
I just made that up.
It's not necessarily the code you're advocating.
Right.
Some places separate that out as a permitted use with such number of chairs. They separate out from the code.
Well, I know people who do facials in their home, little spa rooms, and in Fruvanna, and she's not going to have more than one person at a time. She can only do one at a time. So it seems very innocuous.
I guess from my perspective, there's so many activities that can be done as a home occupation, trying to figure out where to draw the line and put it in another category. So right now, we have to lean on and tell people if it's going to utilize more than 25%, then they have to come up with another application.
And see that. In virtue, that's a beauty. It's a nice bright line.
And it's, unless somebody has a 50,000 square foot house, it's a relatively small amount of space. So there's only so much you can do. You're not going to open up a Yankee can of factory, but you might make some cans.
That's somewhat generous with some localities.
Really?
Some is more 10, 15%.
Yeah, I've seen 10%.
So, well, look at it this way. You have a 4,000 square foot house, you have 25%, that's 1,000 square feet. That's quite a lot.
Right, but I'll bet you the average house in the county is not 4,000 square feet.
No, it is
But if you want to have a little dance studio and a bar, you know, you're going to need some square footage for that, not a lot of people, but you'll need some square footage. You want to exclude from these things much more intensive uses, like perhaps a veterinarian, you know, things that are covered under other parts of our code. One of the criteria I've seen in several of these codes is you exclude the ability to sell things that are not produced on the premises. You know, so you're not retail. You're doing your photography, you're doing, you know, there's a whole set of standards that can help to ensure that it maintains this home occupation.
You can keep in mind that at some point, the building official may have a say in how you, what type of codes versus the use, and what that could create an additional expense that you wouldn't anticipate.
Well, that's, there's not really a redo about that.
Yeah. And that's a good limitation. That's a good limitation. You know, it truly is a home occupation. It's something you're doing.
But
that's the reason.
But if you're going to have a building permit that brings your use into compliance, that's something that potentially could lead to a change in character that we would look at.
That's the reason for maintaining in the home, not using other dwellings. Other buildings. The idea being, I live there. I'm not going to do anything in my own house. It's going to be disruptive.
In my neighborhood, we have one, which I reckon you would call it a home occupation, but they have a SUP where they have a separate building that they do their business from. And up the road, I have another lady that has, she does seamstress work. And that's entirely two different things. The one guy down there, he makes horse jumps and that type of stuff. But he has an SUP. So, you know, so there's a big difference. If somebody in our neighborhood is making these signs, which has become a big thing recently, out of pallets and selling them, mm-hmm. It's a whole lot different than this man down here making these horse jumps, which are sometimes 3/4 as long as this table.
But if you had a farm where you made horse jumps and you had a barn which you would store them in, why would that harm the cat? Why would they have to get a special use permit for that?
Well, most of the time, this type of business requires tractor trailer to come in there to load up the products and take them away.
You have to have a tractor trailer to haul cattle.
That's covered by agricultural exceptions that we haven't touched out. Yeah, we do have one agricultural enterprise permitted use that some part of this stuff in agriculture is going to fall under. It's kind of open-ended in a lot of ways. And I tend to make that interpretation quite a bit.
You don't want farm.
Homeowner's favor.
You don't want farm bureau mad at you.
No.
Come on. They carry guns. They carry guns.
Very bad. So I guess to conclude, we're trying to reconcile these three uses, home occupation, fine art studio, and small home industry. Our end goal is not to make it more restrictive. We do want to allow people to be able to do certain activities from their home. So we just want to ask a couple of questions. I guess when it comes to home occupations and the type 1 versus type 2, do you feel like that's something we want to add into the ordinance if we just tweak a little bit and add some standards? Or do you feel like our existing definition might cover all the activities?
Maybe we ought to roll them all in. You know, take the small home industry, the fine art studio, and put them all under, you know, a two-tier, if you like, approach with a standard for each.
The origin of small home industry is being outside the dwelling, using accessory buildings. And there's nothing magical about that. It's just that's the way it happened.
Well, which goes to number two, which is whether it should include accessory structures.
And I would argue that it should allow that. I understand where it came from and why, because I think that opens up, of all these things we've talked about, once you allow that accessory structure, there is a greater opportunity for abuse or impacts you still keep that 25% of the combined total of the house and accessory structure. I mean, the accessory, there are rules for accessory structures, right? So the accessory structure can't be 20,000 square feet on my 2-acre lot.
Well, I wouldn't be too sure of that.
Okay.
your idea of the 25% thing is a better guarantee of that. One thing occurred to me was, how about somebody that, for example, details racing cars? He doesn't build them, but he details them. He's going to need a major building to put them.
And then if that's more than 25% of the combined total of the house and the building, then he needs to get an SUP. I mean, you know, I think that's a reasonable restriction, the 25%. I think so.
May look at, I don't know if it would be smart to look at the difference between the major and the minor, saying that the minor home occupation is a percentage of the build of the accessory structure as well as the dwelling, but then a major home occupation, you might be able to use the whole accessory structure for something like in an appropriate way, like if you've got an A1 zoning and that allows major home occupation and you want to have a big pottery barn, great, you know. Whereas in a house in Lake Monticello, that might not be appropriate.
Okay.
Some operating standards for these types of uses subtract from a dwelling unit the area of a garage before they do the 25%. It's interesting because some houses, you know, might have 1,100 square feet and a 600 or 700 square foot garage, and the 25% sort of allows people to use the entire place.
I mean, there may be in various residential zonings, I can see precluding the use of an accessory structure. Because now, I mean, that accessory building is likely closer to your neighbors than your house is, you know, because it's, and that could have a more, and you're more likely to impact your neighbor when they're 20 feet or 50 feet from you than when they're, you know, 5 acres down, you know, on the next 5-acre lot.
Well, I had a zoning violation on a very small lot in Fairfax where the shed was being used for taxidermy, and the skins were hanging on the side.
But the neighbors
love
that.
It skeeved the neighbors. I mean, you don't want that. So, I mean, there are some things that may or may not be more appropriate.
You better name it that raccoon carcass hanging on the tree outside your house.
Yeah. Like 12 of them last time I looked. So, yeah.
I think I've seen what you talk about in standards, and I think I've even seen where the major versus minor, the minor might be confined to 10%, whereas the major might allow 25% or something like that. So we could take a look at that. I kind of have an idea on the standards now. So I guess we just got to figure out, do we need to keep all three uses, or maybe just put everything under one umbrella, and it sounds like it one could be just the direction that would like us to go. So,
whatever you do, though, make sure that you note that fine art studios are permitted. Because you don't want somebody coming in, well, we used to have a fine art studio and they took it out.
Yeah.
We don't want that getting around.
I seem to recall some previous standards I worked with specify things about class size, number of students permitted, and all of that. That might cover some of that.
All of that relates back to what are the problems.
Yeah.
Signage.
Traffic.
Another one.
Signage, noise. Yeah.
Those are reasonable restrictions that allow people to do something, but also help with the impact.
One that you might want to think about is the appearance of the property. It has the appearance of a residential structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally that's no outdoor display.
Mm-hmm. Well, no outdoor display, and you don't have
sign. Or you have a small, you're only allowed a small sign.
Here. Here.
Get your picture done here.
There was a whole study done on this about this 10 years ago in the town of Duck, and they redid all their in North Carolina, and they redid all their ordinances, so there's some good standards language in there you might look at.
Thank you.
So in other words, a person has a big birthday party at their house and puts up balloons outside the driveway, and a whole lot of people come, that's perfectly legal, but they can't come there to do something else.
Yeah, but you don't have a birthday party every week.
Unless you're operating on a birthday venue out of your house or throwing out to people.
I don't think that's a good
depending on how many kids you have.
I don't think that's a good equivalent argument either, Ben.
Depending on how many kids you have.
Well, if you have 50.
Well, it does. This kind of thing does arise.
Oh, I know.
Because you have a nice, you know, like Mrs. Eager's farm, her daughter got married and they had the wedding outside. And it was a lovely wedding. Well, this didn't happen, but it could have. What would happen if I said, oh, that was a lovely wedding. Trish, would you mind if our daughter comes and has her wedding on your farm? And we did that with somebody, but it was somebody else. That's where you begin to squeeze the line for between what's just an ordinary accessory to a residence and then something else. That's one of the major.
People have been married at my farm, but they haven't paid. Friends.
If you have 52 friends, all with kids getting married, and that happens every year.
Not every year, no.
You have a lot of friends. You need to have huge people friends. How do you keep up with all the friends?
But your daughters. I used to do that. It's too much work now.
Okay, I have some good ideas now.
If you're finished, we'll go on to our next item for the work session, which is CTA density updates.
We've been discussing the R3 zoning. The by right is 2.9 dwelling units per acre. And based on the discussion from our last work session, Mr. Ribb had suggested raising up the amount allowed by special use permit to say 6 or 8 dwelling units per acre. And Ms. Cotalesa had asked if there are any permits or any conditions that we could attach to those special use permits. And so I saw that Albemarle County has something called bonus factors, where if you meet these bonus factors, then you get to have a higher gross density than what the zoning by right is. So for what they allowed was certain environmental standards, development standards, and affordable housing. So if you had a certain percentage of your property that was going to be zoned R3 was within a conservation easement, or if you had good connectivity of streets, or if you provided a certain amount of housing that was at an affordable level for the locality, then your density could be raised up to 15 or 16, I think in that case it was 15 dwelling units an acre. And the question that arises is would the commission like us to just increase the buy rate amount, 2.9? Would you like to see a special use permit be required? And if so, what is the number that you'd like to have raised up to? R3 does have certain recreation requirements, where if you happen to have so many amount of homes, you need to provide certain types of recreational amenities. And we could use that as a bonus factor, or we could add some of our own.
Bonus factors have not been entirely successful in Albemarle County.
Okay.
And there are similar things in the city of Charlottesville. They've been abused, I would say is a fair way of saying it.
The affordable housing one has a lot of media coverage lately about how wildly unsuccessful.
It is unsuccessful and it's difficult to administer. One of the things they do in the city is you can get credit for whatever your standard is. Affordable housing might be one. It's not on this property. You got another property over here, and it's excuse me, it's in a less profitable neighborhood. So you commit that to having affordable housing, and you can have a more profitable neighborhood and get the higher density. Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon in the city of Charlottesville.
I think this bonus thing, it could be a nightmare for y'all to work with.
There's only three of us. So.
And I like the fact if we go to a certain amount by right and then go to, they could come back with an SUP for a larger amount. I just think that instead of going to this bonus thing, I just think that could be an absolute nightmare for the planning department. And then you got somebody, well, you did this for such and such person. Well, I want the same deal, but it may be completely different. I mean, that's my opinion.
And if you do it by special use permit, you have no control over the planning commission.
That's true, but you also have a broader range of control.
Right.
So if you have somebody, if you put a condition on there that will let you have 8 units an acre, whatever it might be, instead of 3, well, but you've got to do it in a compact area so that you have large areas of open space around it.
I agree with that.
Something like that.
Probably need water
and sewer as well. I think that's almost certainly true.
Do you think we could work with the fact of by right to 2.9 and then the SUP to up to 8 with certain conditions?
I wouldn't put any preconditions on it. If you're going to use a special use permit, because the flexibility of a special use permit is you can impose the conditions on a case-by-case basis, which I think is desirable.
And the special use permit allows you to place the conditions that are rezoning to the same development. Is that what I'm getting?
I was just wondering if you all would like to increase the 2.9 or keep 2.9 as a by right and have a special use permit to increase to X and Mr. Devin shows them 8 dwelling units per acre. We can get that. Or
what would the cost of that special use permit be?
It's $800.
So $800 if you're going to increase your density to 8 dwelling units per acre is a totally new concept. A bunch of
parties.
Yes. Well, $800, that's not the end of it.
No.
I agree with you. It is inconsequential. But don't think that you pay the $800 and you're home free, because then you've got to have design elements and all this kind of
Understood.
Stuff.
So adding the SUP, that was not a consequential additional cost, and it allows the Planning Commission, the Board of Supervisors, and the Planning Department to work with these folks to have something maybe a bit more desirable than what 2.9 to 1 is pretty cool.
And the question is, what is the amount that you'd like to have allowed by special use permit as a maximum?
I would.
It's the amount.
Exactly. What I would like is to see it stay as by right as it is, and for take the language in the comp plan for the upper.
It varies by CPA.
Yeah.
Well, everything has to be consistent with the comp plan, right? So
yes.
If you put the top of the CPA, you know, the top number.
If you do the designs crossroads, says up to 10 dwelling units an acre, Rivanna is up to 6.
So if you said, you know, it's 2.9, but you can get an SUP for up to 10, one of the criteria for reviewing that is which district it's in.
Yes.
It's simplified.
That's all I have. I noticed
you're thinking the higher utility
units that will have water and sewer. You don't necessarily have public water and sewer in the units.
Yeah.
It's not to say
could.
Yeah.
But
right now, we don't.
But when we have the plan to get it, we'll have done a new comp plan.
Maybe. You're going to
see a review of
the plan.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Well, in any case, it's one of the factors in the SUP.
And like, I think that it should be required for
water and sewer. That's part of the condition.
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't have changed anything for that. We've already got a restriction.
So it sounds like 10.
The
maximum amount of electricity going in up to 10 going in spray. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that the last item on our work session? If there's nothing else that we need to discuss at this time, we will recess until 7 o'clock for our regular meeting. 7 o'clock, we'll be calling our regular meeting of the Blue Valley Planning Commission to order for May 8, 2018. Our first order of business will be the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The next item on our agenda is the director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple items to report this month. We have one board supervisor's action in regards to ZTA 1802 telecommunication facilities fees that was approved 5-0, and one BZA action, variance request BZA 1802 for Kathleen Sharp was approved by a vote of 4-0. That's all I have to report this month.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any questions? Okay. The next item is a first of two public comments for the night. You can comment on anything other than the items that are on the public hearing for the night. You will be, when we open the public hearing, you will be able to talk at that time about those items. Anyone wishing to come forward, state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward. Next item is a business a minutes from the April 10th, 2018 meeting. Anybody have any comments or corrections or a motion about the minutes from that date?
I'd like the motion to be approved.
Okay, have a motion by Mr. Johnson, approval of the minutes. Do I have a second? Have a second by Mr. Lagasina. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. The next item, the first item is a public, one of our two public hearings for tonight, SUP 1802, Lake Monticello Owners Association. Mr. Rhett Robinson will bring in this to us.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to give a brief presentation for special use permit SUP 1802.
Can you speak up, please?
I'll try. I'm going to give a brief staff presentation for special use permit SUP 1802 submitted by Lake Monticello Owners Association. This is a request for a special use permit to establish an outdoor recreation facility on property identified as tax map 18A38E. It is located in the Rivanna Community Planning Area. Our current definition of the screen contains error in saying automobile repair services established for the outdoor recreation facility. The current definition talks about its uses conducted in open or partially enclosed or screened facilities, but it does not include public facilities. Examples specifically reference golf courses, which is application pertains to. And then there's some other uses listed, such as driving ranges, tennis courts, motorized cart, and motorcycle tracks, etc. So this special use permit is for a proposed building that would be 6,473 square feet with a office area, a garage area, and storage areas. Those areas would be inside the building. And then along with the proposed building, a parking area will be constructed on the property and pads for gas tanks and a chemical storage building. So this is a map showing the location of the property within the county. You can see it's near the Lake Monticello area. And this is an aerial showing what the current view from above the property, what that currently looks like. You can see at the top of this aerial, the property is undeveloped and contains vegetation. And then you can see its proximity to South Boston Road over here and some of the commercial area. And then there's some residential uses along this Bunker Boulevard here and then Jefferson Drive. And then this is the sketch plan submitted with the application. This is Bunker Boulevard here, and this would be the entrance to the property, which is directly across from Spoon Terrace. The proposed building is here, and then this is the parking area which goes around the proposed building. The concrete pads for the gas tanks is here, and the concrete pad for the chemical storage building is here. And then if you can see the detail, the tree line, with the property currently being vegetated, the tree line will be cleared sort of around the proposed development following this line here. So as you can see from the sketch plan, at least at this time, they're proposing to maintain most of the vegetation on this property. So this is a view of the site as you approach it on Bunker Hill Boulevard, Bunker Boulevard, and Spoon Terrace, which is directly across from the site. That's here in the background in this photograph. And as you can see from this street view, it's still, for the most part, heavily vegetated. And this is another photograph just looking the opposite direction. This is looking back towards Jefferson Drive. So to conclude, this is a special use permit request to establish an outdoor recreation facility. This project is located within Lake Monticello and associated with the existing golf course. The project appears to meet all of the county code requirements. Potential adverse impacts from the request, given the current agricultural zoning of the property, staff would foresee that the use is allowed by right in A1 district would be the most potential adverse impact. So that concludes that presentation. I can answer any questions, and I'll note that the applicant is present for additional questions. A suggested motion is on the screen.
It is actually in the Lake Monticello, because I thought I read it here that it was actually slightly outside of the...
Well, if they purchased the property, then it would become a part of the Monticello.
Right. The Homeowners Association already purchased the property?
At the time of application, it had.
Okay. So it would automatically become part of Lake Monticello?
Yes. It would be owned by the Homeowners Association.
This would have to, all noise ordinance would apply to this property, and as far as Sumana County is concerned, and all lighting ordinances.
All site plan and other county code requirements would have to be followed before a certificate of occupancy was issued.
And it looks like they're going to comply with any screening issues by leaving vegetation, right?
It would appear so. Yeah.
But they'd have to be.
We would have to apply that in the site plan process.
Does anybody else have any other questions for Mr. Robinson? Would the applicant like to come forward and speak about this?
Hi, I'm Angie Cook. I'm the contract officer for Lake Monticello Owners Association, and this is a replacement building for a building that already exists farther down Bunker Boulevard. That actually really sits right on the road of Bunker Boulevard, an old metal building that's it needs a lot of repair. It's a diminished. The association has gone through a lot of changes over the last few years and trying to improve the facilities there and upgrade facilities. And this proposed site would actually be less visible to residents than the current site. And it would also give us an opportunity to dispose of an old pole barn that's sitting out on the golf course that's also in pretty bad shape. So this building would actually combine those two buildings into one site. And more efficient.
How does this property relate in actually to the golf course? How close is it?
Right across Spoon Terrace, you can access the golf course. Through holes 8 and 9 are right there.
Does the property adjoin 8 and 9?
It's right across the street. So you go
so you
right
have
across
to cross the
street.
Road.
Yeah, which they're doing right now. Our golf maintenance personnel do right now. They cross Bunker Boulevard right now at the current location to get to the golf course.
So it's just a short amount of space that they
Yes, sir.
Cross.
Can you give us a feel for the number of vehicle trips per day that would be going to this site, the number of employees that might be working in the office facility, and what the hours are?
Yes, ma'am. There's approximately 10 employees in the summer months. I think we scale back a little bit in the winter months. And it's during the workday hours, so from 7, Jim, help me out.
7 to... Earliest we start is 6, 2:30, we're done. 7 to 3:30, something like that, that's it.
Thank you. Mike Officer, Superintendent.
This is something that has gone before the Owners Association, or is this decision made by just the management?
The budget was approved last year to purchase the land pending the special approval of the special use permit.
That was voted on by the Homeless Association.
It is before the board. The board makes that decision. The Lake Mount Shelter Owners Association Board of Directors approves the budget.
Then it's noted that this is in an A1 zoning district and that this particular layout didn't meet setback requirements and those sorts of things for the district. Has that been revised?
We actually did revise that before this meeting, actually. So those revisions have been made, and a hydrant has been added to the plan also. I don't have you continue.
I saw the hydrant on the plan, but it's further into the facility, and the comment from the fire department, I thought, said to be out on Bunker. Is there also one there? From the plan, it also shows quite a bit of topography right at the entrance to the site. What kind of cut and fill are we anticipating to build this facility?
Well, the site that we actually picked to put the building on, and I've got my architects and engineers here too, it has the less grading requirements. So it's the flatter part of the property.
So you have to get there. So you have to build up the road to get there, correct?
For the entranceway.
That's my question.
Correct.
I'm yes.
Trying to build on a flat piece.
How much activity in a normal day? I know you've got another building that you're using now. At that building, what type of activity, daily activity and noise, and what times of day is the traffic in and out? And how many employees would it be?
Yeah, I think we covered that, but it's 10 employees. It's from no earlier than 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning until 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's mostly lawnmowers going back and forth. Which they do right now. So we're not increasing any activity. It's the same activities that happen right now.
And no increase in employees?
No, sir.
The other building will be demolished or repurposed?
That is up to the board of directors. I don't have an answer to that. But.
And are members of the Homeowners Association and users of the golf course permitted to come on the property and use the facility in some way?
It's really a maintenance building, so
it's predominantly an ancillary use to the primary use.
Correct. It's primarily for staff.
That gives me pause with respect to the definition of things that are allowed in that district, because ancillary uses by themselves wouldn't be allowed. I'm not sure that this meets the definition, but we'll do of a participant use in a recreational facility, but I'll discuss that later.
Any other questions for me?
Anybody else have any questions?
Okay, thank you.
Would this ancillary use be permitted in a recreational area? Does that apply under y'all's examination of the ordinance?
When Mr. Robinson and I discussed this, we felt it did. Just based on the definition.
I
With the accessory structure definition, it's not accessory to anything. This is why this classification is used.
Yeah, it's not a, it's not an accessory structure, it's a primary structure on a single parcel. But it is related to a recreational use.
The applicant, do you want any of your engineers or anyone else to tell us anything about this before I open the public hearing?
Sure. I'm Jim Boyd with Griffin Parker Architects. This, of course, is a project that Lake Monticello has been looking at for a number of years. I think it was 4 years ago when we first started doing assessments of the existing structures. So it's not something that's popped up in the last 30 or 60 days. So not only this board, but previous boards have been talking about this for years. So, and our firm has been involved with the project over that period. I'm here to answer any questions you might have. This is a place where Lake Monticello stores equipment, sharpens mower blades. You heard reference to a chemical storage building. It sounds scary. We're talking about fertilizer. The building code considers fertilizer an oxidant that can explode, so they prefer to people put that in some type of containment, so we're opting for a hut in the yard as a safer place to store that. We're certainly upgrading the way we handle pesticides, gasoline, such matters from the existing facility, so some of those things are being done in a better way than they're being done now. So, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
I have a quick question. Since you've been with the process for a while, maybe you know the answer to this question. There's been some question about whether or not they could rebuild in the same location. And I'm sure that's been discussed. I'd like to know what the outcome of that discussion was.
When you apply the setbacks to the existing building, there's a sliver of land a little smaller than this room on which you can build. So the building is non-conforming, so it would not be possible to rebuild in the existing location and comply with county rules. The Lake Monticello did look at the possibility of acquiring adjacent land that did not turn out to be possible, so they explored that option to their fullest to the fullest extent. And just very bluntly, the adjacent landowner was not receptive to selling the trading property. So it's really not possible to rebuild in its current location. I think we've exhausted the study of that.
If rebuilding is not possible, how about renovation?
Well, as I said before, the building is in a non-conforming location. One piece of it actually sits in the public right-of-way. It was built to right on the property line, and no setbacks were applied to it at that time. I would think you would be looking for a new construction to comply with your rules. So once you apply those setbacks, it would take additional land to generate enough buildable area that no structure could be rebuilt. So that was the first thing you said. That was the first choice. It's just not possible.
Anybody else have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
One other question. Did we have a community meeting at all of this?
Yes.
Nobody came when you had the community meeting at all. So in other words, you had nobody to tell you whether they thought it was a good thing or bad thing.
I don't know whether it's appropriate to speak at this point, but I'm wondering if
It's not, Mr. Chairman.
I'm getting ready to tell him that. It's not proper, but I'm getting ready to open the public hearing. So if you want to say something, you can say something. We are opening the public hearing on this matter at this time. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on this matter, please come forward to the lectern and state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. And I'm pretty sharp about limiting to 3 minutes.
Good evening. My name is Glenn Ruther. I'm a homeowner at 7 Bunker Boulevard. 3 days ago is when I was finally able to download and review the plans of this project, which were unavailable until then. This is a project which I only learned about over the past couple of weeks through letters sent to me by Flavanna County, for which I thank you for informing me about that, even if it has significantly shifted my priorities over these past couple of weeks. 2 years ago, I started a music technology-based company called Lico Sound and Service Technologies, which is based out of my home. In my home, I have recording facilities and a sound isolation booth. Part of the investment in my business is in producing voiceovers, which relies heavily on the audio quality of the recordings I make, which in turn relies even more heavily on the overall quiet of the surrounding neighborhood. Even with the sound booth I constructed in my home back in 2002, I have sensitive mics which do pick up occasional ambient noises, especially low-frequency vibrations, which when they do occur will mean having to do a retake when I'm recording voiceovers. There are many reasons for doing a retake for a job submission, and ambient noise is only one, but thus far I have been able to work around trucks and subwoofers occasionally passing in front of the house. A neighboring maintenance shop for heavy equipment is entirely a different thing. As I'm concerned. To me, this plan means taking considerably longer to complete any audio recording, meaning many more takes to get a good recording, which is already a challenge, as a client of mine will have many other submissions to choose from the same voiceover job. This may no longer be a viable income stream for my business, period. I've been investing a lot of time and money in the direction of this business over the course of many years. I am working hard to try and turn a lifelong passion into a living dream. This decision of this plan could have a significant impact on my chances of returns on my investments, particularly in voiceover. And at my age, my options are fewer and farther between as time goes by. As a Lake Monticello resident for 22 years, 19 of those years in this same house, I know I will feel the impact of the location choice in this new planned construction site and heavy machinery maintenance and repair facility. I don't believe the current relocation plan for the golf course equipment maintenance buildings and repair shops is going to be a positive influence on surrounding properties, which I'm not going to go into because I don't have the time, nor for the future of my business, nor is it for outdoor recreational purposes, as is the specified intent in the zoning variance. For me personally, the time and place of this could not have been worse. I prefer Illinois to pick another location and not be granted the zoning variance. So thank you for the time.
Anyone else wanting to come forward, please come forward, state your name and address.
Okay. Hi, my name's Jay Brown, and I live at 6 Spoon Terrace, which is just on the other side of the entrance to the proposed facility. I'm concerned for one reason, and that's safety. Right now, I have a hard time getting out of Spoon Terrace onto Bunker, heading towards Jefferson, because there's a crest of a hill on the west side, the golf course side. And cars sometimes, they're not supposed to, come over at 40 to 45 miles an hour. I average one close T-boning every 2 weeks coming out onto Bunker. Now, we also have a playground a quarter mile away, the Bunker Ball Field. And there are teenagers walking up and down, back and forth, from the ball field to Jefferson and on to the stores all the time. There is no walking path. They have to walk on the road to do that. My feeling is that should there be a bunch of slow traffic out there and people like me looking left ahead and to see if somebody isn't going to T-bone me from the west side, this is just a disaster waiting to happen. It really is. And so that's the only reason. And I'm sure others sitting here, we have four or five, we only have eight houses on the road. And it's down in a gully. We have to rise up. And I'm sure they have similar fears that I do. That's all I have to say. I hope you take this into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, can I ask a question related to something there real quick?
Yes.
So I guess the normal sightline issues related, if this were on a county road, don't apply here, that there are the county's responsibilities to address those.
VDOT
is not going to weigh in on this because it's on a private road.
They're not going to weigh in on private roads.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Internal circulation. Right. Only in that how it relates to accessing the access point to their system.
Right. Which in this case, it's not going to access their system.
Correct.
From there to the golf course. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to come forward? Come forward. Speak your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes.
My name is Jack Byers. I live at the Lake 44 Ponderosa. As an adjunct to the previous speaker's comments, he's quite correct. Traffic coming from the west off Bunker comes down a slope at a good clip. There appears to me to be sufficient room in here to build at least a turn lane into this facility on the property as would exist. From right here down in. This would keep that slower traffic, which is typically golf course maintenance equipment, off the road quicker and keep people from coming over the hill being quite surprised. I see the same thing he sees. I walk on that same road 5 days a week just for exercise, and I see it continuously. And a comment, if I may, and this may be rhetorical, I don't know, but it taps on both the Planning Commission and Lake Monticello Owners Association. If this new facility is built, the question is, what happens to the old facility, the pole barn and the existing? Is that torn down? Is it maintained? It's kind of pretty old already, so that's just a thought that has a touch from both places. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please state your name and address.
I'm Carolyn Brown. I live at 6 Spoon Terrace. My husband has spoken. I can say there are two intersections. You've created an intersection if you put in this to go straight on to face Spoon Terrace. And about 150 yards, there's another very major intersection. That's with Jefferson and Bunker. And we get a lot of maintenance and deliveries that way. It will be almost impossible to walk on either side there with two intersections. There's a drop-off. Also, I would dispute this as being level property. I've lived there for 11 years, and I walk all the time. And I look today, and there's a swale here with a, looks like a water course. And believe me, we get rain, it goes right across there. So that's going to create, we already have water problems on Spoon Terrace. There's a pond, there's a number of things there. And I would dispute the engineering studies. I would think the road would have to be, there has to be a gully. It has to go up and over that, and then up. And there's a flat area that is wet, that I see wet all the time in the winter. And I don't think from any point of view, we definitely need a new maintenance barn. Our people work very hard, but this is not a place for that. There's no way you could move, well, I could see the ground just wouldn't absorb the water. And there would be more flooding all the way along the lower part of Spoon Terrace. Our next door neighbor is actually in an island of water when it's heavy rain. It hasn't been well thought out and hasn't been presented to the community in public.
Anyone else wanting to come forward? If you do, come forward. Speak your name and address, please.
Yeah, my name is Julius Neely. I live at Lake Monticello, section 421 Ponderosa Lane, which is the same section as this facility. I wish the Planning Commission and the Lake representatives would address the terminology. If you could go back one slide here, this is called, and another one to the text, yeah, right there. It's called a recreational facility. The building is to store equipment that cuts grass, equipment that sprays chemicals. It's to store sand. It's to store fertilizer. It's for gas tanks to power all this equipment. It's to store the equipment. It's to maintain, repair, work on the equipment, and an office. What that has to do with recreational facility doesn't make any sense. So they've thrown in paintball. It says automobile repair. It's maybe they have cars they're going to fix there too. I don't know what that means exactly.
That's some mistakes on the slide. I think you're...
Well, they should correct that. Motorcycle tracks, paintball facilities, swimming pools, athletic ball fields. What does that have to do with this 6 acres? Somebody deserves to explain why that's up there. It's a maintenance facility. It's replacing sheds. That's all it is. Please clarify that.
My name is Kathy Sawski, and like my friends, I live at 11 Spoon Terrace. We've lived here probably, owned it at the lake since 87, and we've lived here permanently since 2000, so we've been around a while. I did have the same question as Jay had about why is this called an outdoor recreational facility when I was told it was going to be a maintenance building by our front office, Illinois front office. My concern is more traffic on Spoon Terrace. Now, you know, we live at the bottom of the cul-de-sac, dead center of the cul-de-sac, so, and our property on one side abuts the golf, one of the fairways. And we hear equipment going all the time, constantly. My question is, now that this is going to be an area or a facility that's going to actually house all this equipment, that means we're probably going to have more noise with all this equipment being moved around from various, from the building to various places. Rather than having come from the maintenance shop, it's now going to come from directly across our street. So that's one of my main concerns, and the safety part of it, too. Because of all the chemicals, we all know about these chemicals and what things happen and how things, we just had a boat blow up and destroy 6 boats at the lake. So these things explode. It's just, because this is so close to a residential area, it concerns me because We have lots of kids coming to visit us all the time, and with all these kids walking about, we just want to be sure that this is a safe place for them to be. So that's my concern.
Anyone else come forward? Come forward. I have one question again from the representative from the Homeowners Association. Will there be any actual increase in chemicals with this new facility than actually stored at the maintenance building now?
No, sir.
So it would be no change?
No, sir.
Seeing no one else coming forward, we will end the public hearing at this time and have discussion in the Planning Commission.
I have a question for Mrs. Stewart. If we were to approve this, do we have any control over the signage and so forth, also consider a turn lane or anything like that? Do we have any control, or we just... can we put that as a restriction?
The Planning Commission can recommend any conditions to the board they wish.
In other words, if we want to have certain signage reducing the speed limit through that area and so forth, we need to put it in as a restriction when we grant the approval or disapproval or whatever.
Well, the speed limits are a different issue. Speed limits aren't enforceable.
They're not enforceable.
No, it's not. They're private road. Yeah, they're all.
I was thinking in terms of a recommendation in that area.
I think, Mr. Stewart, I agree with his answer to your question. So if you thought that it was appropriate, let me put it this way. With a special use permit, the question is, what, if any, is the effect of this use on neighboring properties?
Well, what is the speed limit in the area?
Well, theoretically it is, but speed limits are not enforceable. Not from the business.
We couldn't reduce it much over 25.
I'm talking about practicality, not the theory. Now, you can do things like require turn lanes, things like that, if you think they're appropriate to make this use compatible with the neighborhood.
Well, if the speed limit is 25 miles an hour, and you're only moving things like lawnmowers and so forth, that seems like it'd be an unsafe situation. That is, if they are driving 25, no road. That's all right.
In considering this, should we consider another person's home occupation business when we are considering something for the Home Owners Association? And does a home business in Lake Monticello apply to the rules of that?
Yes. So the answer to your last question is yes. Zoning ordinance applies in Lake Monticello. It's an R, it's R4. That is one of the questions I have for you. The staff is what's the zoning of the golf course? I think it's R4 too. So whatever use is permitted in R4, that's what you're limited to. Now, the lake has restrictions that may impose additional limitations, but they can't pre-compliance with the zoning.
Well, what I was reading, I was asking that the first gentleman that spoke talked about a home occupancy business, and we in Fluvanna, do we know about that, and is that in compliance with Fluvanna County's ordinance?
What was the question again, Mr. Bibb?
Should we consider what the first gentleman brought forward about his business and his Fluvanna is he complying with the Nevada ordinance as far as the home occupancy business?
We wouldn't have any way of knowing that unless they approached us the way the current system is set up. So we to answer your question, no, we don't know at this time without evaluating some proposal.
Home occupations generally are permitted in R4.
But whether it's in compliance or not, I couldn't say without evaluating.
I'm just trying to figure out whether we should consider that when we're making a decision. That was my main question.
Yes, you have the right to consider that.
We require that home occupations be consistent with the residential nature of the community. So anything that would affect a residence, to me, would be the same thing, whether there's a home occupation or not. So it's, you know, it's generally how this particular use is going to affect the neighborhood. I have a couple of comments, if I may, Chad. First, question was asked earlier whether this property was part of the Lake Monticello Owners Association. The property, as I understand it, is under contract to purchase by the Lake Monticello Owners Association. And the lake can own properties that are not literally part of Lake Monticello. This isn't zoned like the rest of Lake Monticello, so it's not technically, in my eyes, a part of Lake Monticello. It's zoned A1. Several people have talked about, both in their written comments and their oral testimony, about rezoning and variance actions. Those are all semantics that I think get confused as people are coming before the board. This is not a rezoning and it's not a variance. It is a special use permit. And it's come in as a special use permit under the A1 agricultural zoning district that this particular property is now zoned. In order to come in under that A1, it is coming in as an outdoor recreation facility, which is allowed by a special use permit in this district. The question I have is whether this particular use is consistent, as some of the others have mentioned in public testimony, and as I mentioned before, whether this meets that definition. Is it an outdoor recreation facility? The definition says it is predominantly participant uses. Now, I mean, that's the first sentence of the first statement. Conducted in open or partially enclosed or screened facilities. I don't think it meets either of those tests. I don't think it's a predominantly participant use, nor is it open or partially enclosed or screened facilities. So, on the other hand, I do not feel that a maintenance facility like this is not consistent with a golf course. It certainly is. You'd have the same sort of facility in a ball field. You need to have maintenance facilities for these. But to me, they become ancillary uses and should be with the predominant use and not sort of what looks to me being shoehorned into an A1 zoned property through an inappropriately defined special use.
So, a question for you, Mr. Stewart. I tend to have the same question about, is this appropriately named, and, you know, is this truly an outdoor recreational facility? But I think, and this is why I'm asking you, because I want to make sure my memory is good, this is more of a landscaping type supply area. Wouldn't that also be covered by an SUP in
yes,
the A1?
Or automobile maintenance repair facilities, and we discussed whether it's a bit.
Any activity that they're proposing could be covered by an SUP in an A1 zone.
And the reason we said all outdoor recreation facility was the association with a recreational use.
Okay.
Seemed the best fit what they're proposing.
Right. So, but nothing is incompatible with special use permitted activity in A1.
It's just called athletic or recreational.
Well, it's clear that this is kind of like what you're saying. It's basically part of the golf course in terms of its use.
Yes.
And
it's not attached, but I get it. Yeah.
I'm going to talk about space now. I'm talking about the right. use. So clearly, the greenskeeper is not one of the participant users. He's a staff member who works on for the members of the user. Outdoor recreation facility is a permitted use by a special permit in the R4 as well as the A1. Now, this is not an accessory use. It cannot be an accessory use to the golf course because it's not on the same parcel and it's not the same zoning district. I litigated that in the Supreme Court and lost, so I always remember. So that's something that it's up to you to determine whether your judgment is appropriate use for this property.
So that helps me understand why you made the determination that you did, that it is part and parcel of the golf course activity, which is outdoor recreation, and best you can tell, nothing that's going to occur here could not be covered by a special use permit of some type.
Correct, and it is unusual in an agricultural zone property directly joined with the Lake Monticello development.
Doesn't this
types of uses that go on with it?
Yeah, or all the definitions anyway.
Landscaping materials supply, for example, is also permitted by special permit in A1.
And that's what I remember, because we've approved some of those. We've approved some automobile repair facilities under SUPs and A1 zoning. So,
and something we probably could have tried to fit that in that definition, but something of that intensity, we were kind of skeptical of allowing the lay vicinity.
So if it were rezoned to R4, to match the rest of to match the rest of Lake Monticello, effectively, and the rest of the golf course, is this use as an outdoor recreational facility or as a landscape or an automobile repair facility allowed in R4?
That's what you
just
said.
An outdoor recreation facility would be.
Right, but we just said that it doesn't neatly fit that definition. So does it do any, does it match any of the other ones?
If you have a golf course, you would need a maintenance facility. Like you said earlier,
sure.
If you have a baseball field, you've got to have a maintenance facilities and so forth. So it is, in some ways, part of the recreational facility, because you wouldn't be able to maintain it without having to maintain it.
The point about this is, Ms. Cotton-Lessing used the word ancillary, and that's an appropriate word. If this were zoned R4 and it was joined to the golf course as an integral parcel, then it could qualify as an accessory use to the golf course. So the special use permit certainly be appropriate. And whether it's appropriate as a matter of fact is a question, but legally it would be appropriate to have a special permit as an accessory use. I was going to say at the beginning when you asked the question, is this part of Lake Monticello, that really all depends on your definition, because it's Lake Monticello was a creation of a private developer, and it really it wasn't a typical planned development because it didn't have a master plan for it, and the there are parcels of land that are owned by the owners association that are not within what most people would think of as Lake Monticello. This would just be another one. So without trying to sound too much like a lawyer, the question question you asked is hard to answer without being, it's hard to answer yes or no. It's more something than that.
Lawyers love those questions.
I'm kind of partial to yeses and no's that just don't come up very often.
One other question while we're talking about it. How was the public notified of the community meeting?
Same way as the public hearing for tonight or next week. Or joint property owners received a mail notice.
So they did receive mail notice?
No.
Joint property owners were mail notices.
I think he's talking about the public meeting that Joe about.
Yeah, we don't know about that.
Is that what you're asking about?
There's a neighborhood.
He's asking
about the neighborhood meeting.
Hold on.
The question you asked was the community meeting, and that's the one that's sponsored by the staff as part of this process.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with any internal workings of the association.
There's a list in the packet of the folks who were mailed
The adjacent property owners.
Which I think it's just the parcels that literally adjoin this one.
Right.
Which is the process.
And there was signage posted as well, right?
Not for the neighborhood meeting.
No, I mean for the special use permit.
Yes.
Does staff know if anybody had approached? From the lake had approached the Baltimore Fire Department about accessing from their property, since it directly joins behind it.
There was initial discussion the applicant had thought about also simultaneously doing a remote to our form along with this, and they elected not to do that at this time, since the use was already permitted by special use.
Do we have any other discussion, any other questions for staff or for Mr. Payne?
One quick one. The staff report said that it was unclear at this time whether the pole barn and the current maintenance shed would be demolished or repurposed. I understand that the maintenance shed is non-conforming and slightly in the public right-of-way. Certainly, the purpose of non-conforming is because you want to remove non-conforming uses. We'd certainly expect that if this body were to recommend to the board approval, that we might think about recommending that those two old buildings be demolished with a condition of approval. I would just put that out on the table.
If the use is moved to another property, they have 2 years to reestablish that use on that property. Maintain their non-conforming vested rights. So even if the building is vacant, they would need a special use permit to reestablish the use.
I'm talking about the physical environment.
It's kind of less, as I understand the point, you're suggesting that a condition of the approval of this permit might be the removal of the other building. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Is the they mentioned two buildings. Storage area and then a pole barn. Is the pole barn also non-conforming, or is it just old and whatever?
I believe the pole barn is actually on the golf course, and I don't believe
so. It's non-conforming.
Well, it's probably all non-conforming, to be honest.
The R4 was created in 1992.
Lake Monticello was established
about 20 years
in the late 60s. There was no zoning.
So not everything is going to fit cookie cutter into the R4.
But it wouldn't. There's no special use for the car. So the whole thing's not important.
Okay. Technically, the whole lake is considered not.
Most of the lot, at least a large number of the lots.
I don't think we want to have that discussion tonight.
Does the zoning board specify a time at which activities can begin, like a noise ordinance? Sometimes they say 7 a.m.
Hours of operation.
Yeah.
You can certainly specify that in the condition.
Certainly. The noise ordinance itself, it I'd have to take a look at it to see how it's applied to the zoning and the type of use. But it would apply during, there are certain exemptions for construction, but generally I think this provision will apply.
You know, a couple of employees coming in and setting up for the day or going into an office is one thing, but revving it up at 6 a.m. will be another for the community, being that close to houses.
And you'd be sharpening metal blades.
Right.
Noisy. And some of the houses along Slice there, at the Slice Gate, I'm not sure what that road is, are set way back into the their properties as opposed to out near the front. And so they're fairly near the, you know, much nearer. And while trees are a good visual buffer, they're not a great noise buffer. So, you know, it would be useful to specify that. So, yeah, this, yeah, they're set fairly, yeah, they're set further back than most of them.
Any more discussions? Any more questions?
But I think that you should probably address the hours of operation.
I think earlier they said come in at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, which to me sounds a little early for that type of operation, but I reckon the fact that they get out there and cut that golf course before people get on it, so I don't know. So, has there ever been any I recognize we wouldn't know anything about any complaints about the noise as far as the equipment from the previous maintenance.
I mean, but they're moving the facility within, granted, within residential area, but they're moving it to a new place. So I think we need to take into account that 6 a.m. is pretty darn early for somebody to run any kind of heavy equipment, if there is heavy equipment here in that area, that length of the proposed house.
Mm-hmm. Representative from the Homeowners Association, would there be any problem to say, for instance, we limited the time to say, or the start time to say 8 o'clock?
Yeah, that won't work. We're talking about mostly volume. Yeah, if their hands
hit the wall first, yeah. We're not looking to change the operation. How it operates currently.
But you're moving it to impact different people.
Yes.
Whoever's answering your question needs to identify himself or herself for the record.
Okay.
So I'm answering the question for the association, Angie Cook, contracts officer. We are not looking to change our operational hours with the movement of this facility. The existing facility sits next to homeowners also right now. And there is no heavy equipment that is being operated out of the facility. It's lawnmowers.
So that the actual lawnmowers, the actual blade mechanism would not be turned on until you got actually onto the golf course. So the actual just driving to the golf course.
Right, they're just going to dip across the road onto the golf course.
And you say 6 o'clock would be the earliest?
Yes, sir.
What is the latest at night?
3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Three o'clock
in the afternoon.
Yeah.
How many pieces of equipment normally goes out in the mornings?
Two greens mowers, two T mowers, maybe six pieces.
So this is Jim Bristow. He's my golf course supervisor.
I'm the golf course supervisor.
So in other words, they were basically the little time going over to the golf course, and then they're actually on the golf course where they normally are. Any other questions? Do I have a motion?
Sure. So I I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of this of SUP 1802, a request to establish an outdoor recreation facility with respect to 6.134 acres of tax map 18, section A, parcel 38E, subject to the five conditions of the staff report.
Okay. I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Lagunzino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Any?
No.
No vote. But it passes 4-1. Thank y'all. Okay, need everybody calm down. We got to go to the next item.
Good evening. This is for zoning text amendment 1804 regarding fees for the Board of Zoning Appeals. Talking about the appeal of the zoning administrator fee, that's currently $125, whereas the fee for variance is $550. Both the appeal of the zoning administrator and the fee for variance, the process is the same, reviewed by staff. They go before the Board of Zoning Appeals, a determination is made. The process, both those are the same. And the staff cost is roughly $530, plus the cost of an advertisement, which is $157. Currently, our fee, $125, doesn't even cover the cost of an ad, let alone ads and staff. So what we're proposing is that the fee for the appeal of zoning administrator form be raised from $125 to $550, which is the same as we charge for variance. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I know.
We discussed this at previous work session.
At a work session, yes.
I don't see any problem with it myself. I don't really have any questions. I mean, I know we're not going to get exactly what we it costs to do us, but putting it more in line with what it really costs is a better idea.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any questions? Do I have a motion?
You have to have a public hearing first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think they're relatively uninterested.
We'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone wishing to come forward and talk about this item, please come forward, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the public hearing. Okay. The next item.
Motion.
Oh, I lost my train. I have a motion.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of ZTA 1804, an ordinance to amend Chapter 22, Article 17 of the Savannah County Code by certain amendments to Section and Subsection 22.17.7 thereof, amending the Savannah County zoning ordinance. The public purpose of these amendments is to bring fees in line with costs.
I have a motion by Mrs. Costa-Lesso. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Next item on our agenda is a new business item that was added today. It's a 2232 review of Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Project. Mr. Stevens will be bringing forward.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to give a little background on what a 2232 review is, if it happens so infrequently here. From time to time, Planning Commission has asked you to review under State Code Section 15.2.2232. The 2232 review process determines the compatibility of proposed public facilities with the locational guidelines established in the comprehensive plan. Specifically, The process determines if the general or approximate location, character, and extent are in substantial accord with the Fluvanna County Comprehensive Plan. And in particular, this relates to a resigned Crossroads Water Project. Mr. Dahl, Mr. Payne had some discussions yesterday that related to what was the procurement of IF?
Well, it has to do with the planning for the line itself and acquisition right away and things like that.
We just want to give you a little background on that, and there are some relevant comprehensive plan references as it relates to infrastructure that relate to the location and in particular the DOC initiative about Fluvanna County partnering with the Department of Corrections to have a water project in Science Crossroads area, and also it's referred to in the Economic Development Chapter. It specifically mentions partnering with Louisa County and the Department of Corrections in that chapter, and suggests that the location for those services will be in Science Crossroads. So I have a motion, but first Mr. Stevens will be give a presentation that will explain the Science Crossroads project in a little more detail.
Let me make a couple comments about the statute, because the reason this is unusual is that there are all developments that have to do with public improvements, things of that sort, infrastructure, roads, etc., are to be reviewed for compliance with the comprehensive plan. Most of them come up in the context of either a subdivision or a site plan. And by the terms of the statute, there's no need for a separate review if they're reviewed under the site plan and subdivision standards. Also, occasionally, you're going to see this come up with something like a special use permit. And the steps you have to go through for a 2232 review can be complied with in the special use permit context. In this case, let me say this before we get to that. The other way you can do this is if the feature in question is shown on the comprehensive plan. It's actually depicted on the comprehensive plan. The best example we have of that in Fluvanna County is the James River water pipeline, which those of you who are on the commission then remember the plan was expressly amended to show the route of the plan. So there was no need for a 2232 review shown on the plan. That's not the case with this project. In order to proceed with the development and acquisition of right-of-way for the plan, this review is necessary. It's already been reviewed and approved by the Board of Supervisors, but your review for compliance with the comprehensive plan is necessary. Notice that this is a very general review. Mr. Stevens is going to give you an overview of this, but it is not a question of whether the alignment should go on property A or property B, or whether it's due east, due west, or whatever. It's the general or approximate location, character, and extent that you're reviewing it for. So this is more or less a conceptual review based on the comprehensive plan. Hope that's helpful.
Well, in fact, this is one of the reviews that the Planning Commission does as a matter of its purpose for being here. You know, is that the Planning Commission under Virginia statutes gets to make these determinations. You know, where the money's spent, what everything that goes on that he's doing, the Board of Supervisors approved, but this Planning Commission gets to say if this is consistent with the adopted comp plan. So it's really an interesting process when it comes up.
And this is a timing issue with some of what Mr. Dahl is trying to do with finalizing the construction of the project that we were asked to get this on the agenda yesterday to try to move things along as quick as possible. And now,
it should have come to you before, didn't it?
You can trust me, if I had known that this needed to be done, I would have been here 3 years ago, or two anyway. And I have presented a general overview, and been, there was no motion made, but I did present a presentation on this project before, although I suspect that at least three of you weren't on board at that time, so this will be new to some. Basically, this is a project that's designed to bring the initial phase one service of water and sewer to the Zion Crossroads community planning area, particularly the eastern end of it. This is in accordance with a preliminary engineering report and sort of a mini master plan that was previously done for the entire CPA, and this was recommended as the first step. This is a map of the Zion Crossroads area, not the entire CPA, because the CPA now runs all the way to the county line, but down in the bottom right corner is Route 15, coming up intersecting with Route 250. The letters you see are, well, sort of self-explanatory, but down where you see the D, that is actually on the piece of property that it's a vacant parcel with a stormwater management pond on it, and it's owned by the same gentleman that owns Max Auto, making properties. That's a sewage pump station. Eventually, there'll be some collection system built in around that area. The force main will come out of that thing and go all the way down and around the prison property and dump into the headworks of the prison's wastewater plant. The water side of things involves a water booster station on the prison property, which will pull water out of their water system from their storage tank that they treated and pump it. Well, it's going to go both ways, but pump it primarily down towards the east to an elevated storage tank that's going to be sitting at the front of the Better Living Industrial Park. And additional lines will go back all the way to where Max Auto is. And subsequent to this slide being made, a business that is intending to locate in the county had approached us about doing a waterline extension westward from the prison to Memory Lane and then down Memory Lane. I think probably all of you are familiar with those people. And that is now officially part of the project. But it is all in accordance with pipe routes that were laid out in that preliminary engineering report by RK&K. This shows you a top view of the prison. This is the extension coming from the booster station and going down to the end of Memory Lane. And, oh, whoops, this thing's sensitive. Let me back up where I was. There we go. Just a little schematic layout of the booster, water booster pump station. Probably more important is going to be what it's going to look like, which we're basically going to try to make it match the prison, the buildings on the prison grounds. So anyone looking at it from the road would see an off-white yellowish building with a green roof that certainly appears to be an ancillary use to the prison. Then we have an elevated water storage tank, which that's a picture of Louise's, and I'm usually reluctant to show anything Louise County here, but essentially the tank's going to be a twin of that. It's a 500,000 gallon elevated, which is called a hydrosphere. And the other thing we were able to do, our topography worked out in our favor. The top elevation and the operating range of our tank are going to be identical to that tank right there. So in the future, we will be able to share and swap water back and forth between Louisa and us as needed to either help each other out, like if they need to someday paint that storage tank. We could enter into an agreement with them to provide storage for their system while they do that, and likewise we could do the same. Most of the water is going to be coming our way from Louisa, because as part of this project, we're getting 75,000 gallons a day of water, which is the excess amount that they can spare from the prison water treatment plant. But we have an agreement with Louisa, effectively, for them to treat a portion of our share of the raw water coming from the James at their new plant in Birdcliff, and then bring it to Zion Crossroads, run it through a meter, and sell it to us at such time as we max out the capacity from the prison. This is what the sewage pump station schematic looks like. It's going to be front. It's going to basically front right on Route 15. It'll be next to that stormwater management pond. There'll be a little building, most likely a precast concrete structure that looks something like that, with a brick, a brick look finish or something on the outside. It's basically a little utility building. It'll be maybe 300 feet, 400 feet further south from where that big, I think it's a telephone. No, it's a power telephone. Something that there's a little facility right in front of that. I see trucks in there. I think it's a CenturyLink phone thing, but it's a big connecting point for them, and so it really is going to. It won't be out of place in that area. You're just down the road from this sign.
Yes.
Again, like I pointed out, it'll provide water and sewer for the corridor along Route 250, almost down to the intersection. But since the intersection isn't in Humana County, we're not going to be on the water line yet. And it will allow, its primary focus is to stimulate economic development in the Zion Crossroads area, and it is being designed to provide what you might call better than adequate fire protection for all of the anyone who's along the line. Fire hydrants every 800 feet, probably 1,500 gallons per minute of fire flow at any point in the system. So it's going to be a safety enhancement as well.
Does the fire flow provide for protection at build out?
Well,
that area based on top plan?
That's a good question. This is phase one. Phase two ultimately involves a second storage tank. Believe it or not, you envision it, this might be 50 years from now for all I know. As long as it took to bring water to the Zion Crossroads, phase one, God knows how long phase two is going to take. But west of the prison, a second storage tank is put in. And at that point, and basically that is because you only want to carry water so far. And the longer you carry it in a pipe, even a very large one, the more pressure loss you have. So at some point in time, we'll extend that water system far enough west that the tank all the way down to Zion Crossroads would not be capable of providing the level of fire flow and even possibly domestic flow that we need. But that's down phase two, three, and four of this overall plan. This is what do I call the genesis of it, and it's building the spine of the water system and the spine of the sewer system, which is designed to have a force main that can be overpumped as it goes out to make the ribs and other parts of it going up, I don't know, Troy Road. Somebody wanted to do the big development there, was getting a rezoning. They may extend a water line up Troy or up, I don't know, Oliver Creek, if it turns out that. But basically within the CPA, anything you see within that yellow area, we intend to serve at some point in time. And I do apologize for not coming before you before on this. I did not know it was needed. I guess I made some assumptions that I shouldn't have made. The county administrator made some assumptions he probably shouldn't have made too. We just didn't realize that having gone out and done the preliminary engineering report and having it presented and such, that it wasn't kind of already part of the plan. That's about all I have. The status of it right now is that the design is complete. I know the first slide that we showed said we're getting ready to go out for an RFP for design, but the design is 100% complete. We have what we call the bid sets for plans in our possession right now, and we're ready to advertise this thing.
You're scheduled to go out tomorrow.
That's why
we're ready. That's what I figured.
Well, and the short notice is
the capitalist term.
In all honesty, we intended to have this thing out to bid about 3 months ago, but we've just had a little niggling problems that kept us from getting it finished. And now, of course, when the 2 days before we're supposed to bid it, the county attorney walks in and says, hey, look what we need to do. And anyway, that's why I'm here tonight. But we have our agency approvals. I even have a certificate to construct from both the Virginia Department of Health and the DEQ, which are important documents you have to have because it lets everyone know you have permission from them to actually build this thing. We are still awaiting the Corps of Engineers permit, which has to do with wetlands. We're not actually going to be disturbing any wetlands. We'll be directionally drilling the pipe in any area where we're crossing a stream or a wetland area. But I'm comfortable going out to bid because it's going to be a 75-day bid period, and I'm almost certain we're going to be clear with the Corps of Engineers by the time that the bids are ready to come in. And if we're not, then we'll just start pressing a little bit because it should be a simple enough permit because there aren't any wetlands being disturbed, not even the small amount that you're allowed to disturb without having to do the offsets. So our next set steps, land and easement acquisition and the invitation for bids. I think this approval that we need from the Planning Commission is vitally important to the land and easement acquisition, because were we to get into a position of condemnation, this could be
this is a necessary precondition of even having full approval.
Well, it puts a period on public purpose.
Exactly. And I think it's sort of, I guess, widely recognized that this meets the public purpose and meets the goals of the comprehensive plan, but we just never asked the Planning Commission to officially state it before.
And the Board of Supervisors actually approved this exact design and the cost of this back in November. They saw the same presentation.
Staff has been keeping a lot of balls in the air on this one.
Do we have to have some type of motion?
Yeah. I think, can you
do that?
Click on the motion?
Hey, we've had our 2232 review. Mr. Stevens has presented about the water system for Science Crossroads. Do I have a motion on this item?
Let me ask a question. The motion doesn't refer to anything. It just says we find that constructing a water and sewer system within the planning area satisfies location criteria.
No, it's the proposal by the Board of Supervisors to construct.
So that ties directly to the plan.
Okay, so that proposal ties to the plan?
Yes. Yeah.
Should there be a date or any plan number?
I don't think that's necessary.
Okay, do I have a motion?
I'll give you a motion. I move that the Planning Commission find that the proposal by the Board of Supervisors of Fluvanna County, Virginia, to construct a water and sewer system within Design Crossroads Community Planning Area satisfies the criteria of location, character, and extent as specified in the Virginia Code Section 15-2-2232 as amended, and that is substantially in accord with the provisions of the adopted comprehensive plan.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. If there's no other business, and there's no objection by anyone, we will adjourn.
Public comments.
Oh, yeah.
Staff should know that.
We're all turning and looking at
any member of the staff that speaks up now will be charged annual leave.
Okay, this is our second of two public comment sections for tonight. Anyone from the public wishing to come forward and speak on any matter, please come forward to the podium and state your name and address. Seeing no one comes forward, we will end our second public comment section for the night. And if there's no objection from the Planning Commission or staff or our attorney, we will adjourn.
I don't care.
Yes, Jason.